Welcome to our last talk of the evening. We're welcoming Mark and Kolya here. We'll have an inspiring talk about illegal infrastructure, running your own infrastructure with the aim of inspiring you to take part, decentralize, and let's see what you two have to give to the audience. And you know, we want your questions. All of you are here. Let's see who else will build the next new network. Thank you. Let's go.
Thank you so much for the introduction. It's a bit funny. So she actually took away our the main point that we want to say. That we are, the motivation for doing this talk is actually also because we want to motivate other people to help decentralize the internet and, you know, create these gray zones that we have had experiences with in the last 12 or so years. So that's the idea of the talk. Maybe first, we want to introduce us, of course, and there is a story that actually is connected to this event, to the Congress. And about 15 years ago, I was looking for a small server to play with data exchange experiments 15 years ago or so. And, you know, I was inspired by the copy me things. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. And I was really looking for that. And I knew Kolya from back then. And Kolya had this hosting project. And so I approached him and asked him, like, hey, Kolya, we were hanging out on a TeamSpeak, and I was like, hey, Kolya, can you help me out with this hobby thing? And he gave me this server, and I played around with it. And then, yeah, at one point, I mean, we also talked a lot about it, and I got fascinated by the whole technology of, you know, hosting your own infrastructure, doing fun stuff, having basically no limitations. And maybe a question to you, who actually has a server on the internet just to mock around with it and have fun with it?
Wow.
That's a lot of people. That's super nice.
That's very nice.
Yeah, and then to head over to you, how that was for you back then?
Actually, that was very interesting in the way of he approached me and was like, I need infrastructure. And I was like, yeah, why not? And it moved to the point where I was like, well, I also need help. And what about you? You could do something for it and assist. And he was like, yes, sure, why not? And that's how great stories are built, obviously. So, we started this together, this journey. And it never departed in a way.
And the cool thing is that while I was working together, there was, of course, the Chaos Communication Congress. And back then, Kolya was living in Hamburg. And at one point, I was like, you know, 2 years or so after that, hey, Kolya, I want to go to this Chaos Communication Congress. And now it's in Hamburg, and you live there. Can I just crash at your house? But the thing is, we have never seen each other in real life. So there was this kind of weird thing that I, you know, went with my car to his door and knocked on the door. And we have never seen each other before. And it was this really amazing story. And then we went to this place exactly 12 years ago. And it feels really amazing that it all continued until now, and now we are here, and you are all here, and we were given the chance actually also to share our story with us, and why we find it so amazing that this community exists. And one of the things that I can already say, the reason why we are standing here today, and why the reason why this project has been continuing for all of these years, is because there's this fucking amazing community, and that encourages us every time we come here, every time we go to other events, to just keep on the fight for what we do. So now to the content. So, Kolya, what are we actually doing?
Actually, we build and operate internet infrastructure, like websites, servers, colocation, whatever you want to do on the internet, based on multiple jurisdictions. That's a very important part you're going to come to later. So it's, in this case, in Iceland, Romania, Finland, and the Netherlands.
Yeah, and then obviously there's something that we always have to add. We always had this idea that you should be able to sign up anonymously. We have this privacy by default policy, and we enable people to pay anonymously, right? That's the framework, and that's actually the most interesting part. So that's what we say about us. It's, you know, the technical context. What do others say about us? There's this article from the Sputnik newspaper. Maybe you've heard of it. It's kind of like a Russian thing that recently failed and doesn't exist anymore. And they call it a crime scene from the real life, the thriller about the what is the yeah, basically this website. In this case, it's Psiram, which is one of the projects that we give this platform to, basically. And so, and this is what they write in this article. So they say this Icelandic hosting company is a shady company. And there's also a location in Germany, in Hamburg, on the island Neuwerk, but we can't reach them by telephone. So so the company boss is a man called Mr. W. And he has a German ID, but also a Romanian one. So like, obviously, everything is bullshit, but then we thought, well, Neuwerk is this island in the, you know, it's quite far away from Hamburg, actually. It's a beautiful place. So our suggestion is there's this hacker tours thing, right, from that's organized on the Chaos Communication Congress. How about, like, next time we do a hacker tour to Neuwerk and then look if we can find the company there and the last Pirates of the North, because actually the story about Neuwerk is that once, like a couple of years ago, a ship stranded there, and there were some people in Neuwerk who basically robbed the ship, and they are now called like the last Pirates of the North. And we find that actually really funny, like, because, you know, I mean, the things that I mentioned in the beginning as well. So we took this as a compliment to be the last Pirates of the North, maybe. But anyways, that's what other people write, and there's a lot of bullshit on the internet, and it actually amuses us most of the time.
It's more or less always funny.
Yeah. So then comes the question, okay, we do this privacy by default anonymity thing, but why, Kolja?
Actually, obviously, the headline is stolen from the Washington Post, so. But yeah, democracy dies in darkness. It's obviously... as we seen in the opening ceremony, we might end up with totalitarian regimes. We might end up losing democracy if we don't take action. And this includes having projects online that do fight for democracy or provide us information that otherwise would not exist on the internet.
Yeah, so this whole idea is that, of course, we want to protect the right to for journalists to, yeah, basically publish whatever they want and decentralize that, so that there's not a single entity that decides whether or not content can be hosted, but that the idea of the internet being a distributed network and that the powers are also decentralized.
And why do we do this? Because nobody else is doing it, which is not entirely true. There are obviously other projects which do something similar, but the idea of the evening is to say, like, well, there aren't enough, so why don't you do it?
Exactly. So no one else is doing it. We put it in quotes because, yeah, as you said, obviously there are other people, but there should be more, right? There should be more people who contribute into this. And then last point.
Well, it's fun most of the times. So there are some exemptions, and we'll come to that later. But yeah.
And now to come to the how, maybe you should actually explain this.
Yeah, the how way is obviously let's hack the law. So we use several jurisdictions. We move customers between locations. We make sure that it always fits the jurisdiction. We use optimized legal frameworks. There were ideas to build something like the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative, which was a good direction how you want to have infrastructure, a legal infrastructure for free press and media. Though it didn't finalize fully, but it's a good direction how things should be. Yeah, and so. You could put it into the part of we hack a bit the law.
Exactly. And that's also obviously a continuous progress, right? Like, things change all the time, jurisdictions change, so you need to be...
You always need to adapt.
Exactly. But of course, it comes also with technical and logistical challenges, because if you don't, you know, if you're not a super big tech company, you have to do a lot of the work by yourself. You have to... we use a lot of open source software, so there's a lot of work involved in that. And also, of course, the logistical challenges of moving stuff between countries, stuff like that. But then there's actually the bigger part here is that all of this is only possible because of all the accomplices and friends we have, right? Like Kolja and me, that was a long time ago. Actually, I have to add to this. I stopped being involved in the project like 7 or 8 years ago because I went back to university to work in academia. I still say we because it's just this close connection in a way to the project, and also because helping each other out doesn't always need to be something that you know, like in the capitalist sense where there is work that you have, you know, you should get paid for work. No, I mean, that's not the point, but there's also the support of encouraging each other and helping each other out in that way. But
yeah, and doing something with that works only if people, you know, reach out, help. It's as Mark already said, if you have something like the Congress which encourages you and says like, okay, you should do it, there are other people doing something similar, it's a supportive way. And yeah, it works obviously with community support, with having free and open source software, which is in a way of supporting it.
Yeah, so without all these amazing free and source open source projects, no chance of this ever happening. So our work is based on that, like for 100%. But to make this point, like the communities, I can't stress it enough. That's like really the thing that's almost most important, I would say, right?
Yeah.
So this is how you do it. You can't do it alone. You have to, like, you build up a community and you carry it with a community and not as individuals. Right, so the summary. So actually you could say this is a platform, right? And being a platform provider, we focus on anonymity and privacy. The legal grounds are provided by having this sort of optimization working with several restrictions. And then there's the obviously the a radical stance on the right to publish. And maybe you want to say something about that as well.
Yeah, of course, the idea comes to that you should publish whatever you want to publish. Of course, we have somehow over the time we got the part of that there might be like some hidden parts where you're going to say, okay, this is something we don't want to publish, like no Nazi content. But by default, when it comes to media and so on, the idea is to make sure that the parts stay online. You're going to see later that it's actually quite challenging because obviously there's legal and other pressure to remove content from the internet.
Right. So now comes the interesting questions. So if you have something like this, what actually happens, right? Like, what kind of stuff do you encounter when you have a platform like that and everyone can just come to you and pay anonymously and do all that kind of stuff? And we have a little bit of content to show you, and we want to start with the bad stuff to get it out of the way. So let's imagine an order is coming in for a new domain and a website, which is somewhat close to visa verification. Well, obviously not a very nice thing to have on your services. So it's scammers, phishers, malware, cybercrime. Obviously,
that,
you know, people try, and there is a nice practice with it, and you get better at it over time. Well, people pay in advance, right? It's a prepaid thing, so you pay, and then you get your services. When we see something like this, we wait for the payment. Then the order is closed. We tell them, sorry, but you are violating our terms of service. And then we have this piggy bank. And so the money that they pay to us,
and
it goes to a nice project.
Yeah.
What about the ugly stuff?
Oh, yeah, the ugly stuff. Well, there's obviously also people who are like, well, anonymous, it's nice, let's use it. So we always know only afterwards if somebody comes and say, oh, there was something. So we have been told that which after some years we found out that we had the Russians, so APT28, other people who tend to like our infrastructure, and they use it. So if we don't know it, obviously it's hard to detect and to get rid of it, but usually it works that people contact us and say, like, there's an issue, do it. So yeah, there's the same, we shut it down, we take the money and say, well, you donate it now to the next NGO. And that's actually a quite nice way to keep projects which do have not so much money alive. And it works astonishingly well because people apparently don't learn or don't do any due diligence before.
Yeah. And then there's obviously also the unknown, which also is the case for the last case, right? Like sometimes we just don't know who uses the infrastructure because they're using Tor hidden services. But there's this thing that we really do believe that the Tor project is important. So any kind of Tor infrastructure that is hosted, we support that. So now that the bad is out of the way, we'll actually come to...
the good ones.
Yeah, exactly. We come to the good ones. The fun ones. So yeah, maybe. So this is actually so in the news, Psiram, and then you're like, ah, cool. So Psiram is hosted in the infrastructure. So they denounce Russia Today and Sputnik. So that's fantastic, right? And sometimes you read that when someone writes a bad article of you about you, and it's actually Sputnik. So that's how we learn about the good stuff as well. But there are also like amazing collaborators throughout the years, you know, who started such a long time ago with us, and they're still in the infrastructure. And one of those examples is Auktionshilfe.info, which is a forum for people to talk about fraud on the internet and help each other avoiding fake shops and stuff.
Yeah, exactly,
stuff like
to find fake shops and so on. So yeah, it's quite nice.
Exactly. And there's also a lot of other stuff, but basically sometimes customers come and go. We have long-term collaborations with people. And the way usually we find out about those things is by getting abuse emails.
Somebody sends us a nice letter.
Yes. So basically someone saying, this is not good, take it down. And one example for this, again, so this is an email, right? And from someone, and this is actually like a worried citizen, and he has an urgent request for the suspension of a website called Letzte Generation. .org due to criminal activities, and then they tell us that Letzte Generation is a terrorist organization and it needs immediate attention. It's registered and blah, 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 and then they're doing illegal activities, and then we find this pretty funny. And then in the CC, there's like this long list of...
We can scroll and scroll.
Polizei Bremen, I don't know. And it's funny because then you're like, oh, cool, now we have a list of interesting email addresses, maybe we can do something with it. So yeah, but the amount is a bit crazy. Bigger, so yeah.
So yeah, all day long reading emails. No, not like that. But it's quite a bit. Obviously, it differs. So some people just write weird emails because they like it or they have whatever imaginations. There's obviously somebody copied my movie and downloaded it from some torrent website, and it was your IP address, and we're like, oh, could be. Thanks for the info.
Can you tell us about the prince?
There's obviously also rich people, like the there's the Prince von Anhalt, the German guy who bought himself the prince title by getting adopted by some lady, and he was running before some brothel and got convicted for that, and he complained and said, like, I want to have it all removed, and by the way, I'm based in Dubai, and I was like, oh, thanks, now I have your address. The bribing attempts, whatever you can imagine.
So it's not only worried citizens, and it's literally sometimes just crazy rich people that want content to be removed, and then they buy attorneys and try to pressure you. So now comes the question, why does all of this matter? Why are we actually standing here, right? And we saw the title for this Congress, Illegal Instructions, and we reflected a little bit about everything that has been happening over the last 12 years, as we said, and our current image that we have of the situation is that the people that come to use these services anonymously, the amount increases, and also the kind of projects that need protection, that also changes in a very worrisome way. Activists, for example, who maybe 5 or 6 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago, wouldn't have had the need to actually do stuff anonymously and being protected by these jurisdictions. But also the increased risk for you, right?
Yes, that is the other side of it. So, there's a side part of it.
Okay, but it gets harder to do this kind of stuff. That's the thing. And also the increase in more worrisome requests. So basically, the gray zone that we operate in is shrinking. Okay, so now we've actually brought more emails. just to give you an idea of what kind of stuff happens and why we have this idea and this impression of how stuff changes.
Yeah, so this is a good example of people just want to have things removed from the internet so you can't find out of what kind of shady things they did in the past. There's, for example, Dr. Leonard Caldwell, which is just a fake name. In reality, is called Bernd Klein, which did, if you look him up, things that were something you you shouldn't do. Let's put it like that way. And they just hire lawyers, threaten you, and say, like, remove it. And obviously, most companies will be like, oh, you need to remove it, shut it down. And yeah, that's obviously. Yeah.
So the funny part in this email is the page is designed in the style of a Wikipedia page and should thus convey the impression of particular seriousness. So that's the complaint, right? And then we thought, yeah, we show you the website. Oh, no. Ah, shit, I didn't have it in it. But it looks like Wikipedia, right? It's the Psylum page. So they're also very creative with the reasons why you should take stuff down.
Whatever you can find.
Yeah, then we have another one, again, with like lots of internet addresses, you know. Danger, 33 Germans on the extermination list. So this is, again, Psylum. Actually, we have a lot of these. Anyways, so basically someone calling out again. There's some American and whatever activity, and there's these lists, and you should remove them, and obviously it's all bullshit. So these were examples by two private people, basically,
yes,
wanting content removed, right? Oh, yeah, this is actually the website.
Example how...
Yeah, this it should be more serious. Oh, no, yeah. Anyways. Yeah, so, and that one is also, yeah.
Then we have something that is new. We haven't published it so far, so this is an exclusive leak, how we're going to call it. Yeah, this is a takedown notice we got regarding DDoS secrets, which you might have heard about. If not, you should look them up. It's a leak platform which hosts any kind of leaks, including PricewaterhouseCoopers, which got hacked recently, and they uploaded the leak. So you can search through the data, and yeah, we got contacted by the lawyer saying like this is absolutely looking the same. People would gonna mix up the website with PricewaterhouseCoopers, and that's like really bad. Like, I mean, imagine their website looks clearly, obviously the same.
Yeah, so we want you to judge. So this is the leak website. Take a good look.
Yeah.
And now the confusion with the PwC website.
It's obviously the same. I mean, there is no question.
They do something with AI.
Yeah, of course. I mean...
Anyways, maybe you can help us writing the reply later.
Yeah.
Now, and now we actually come to the really... the bad stuff, let's say. So this is a request we got a couple of years ago when the Hong Kong protests were running wild. And it's actually a very serious request from the Hong Kong police force. And we got this PDF, and there's this extraterritorial effect in this basically court decision, which says that this is actually valid for someone who is not being a Hong Kong person, and so basically saying, yeah, you know, this applies to you guys no matter where you are. And then, well, they explain why and what happened and stuff, and then they say what the penalty is, and then it's pretty bad. So if you come to Hong Kong, you get a fine of 50,000 Hong Kong dollars and 2 years of prison. And on each subsequent conviction, the fine increases. And if we don't act on it, basically...
It's time another 2 years.
Yeah. So it actually adds also $2,000.
A day?
What was it? Like every day. Yeah. So it's a bit like this Russian...
thing where Google has to pay one fanstillion... Yeah.
So it's a bit funny because it increases every day. It's probably already a lot, but
yeah, I haven't calculated yet. Probably I owe them millions.
But now this is kind of, it's not really funny. So you can't really do vacation in Hong Kong anymore.
What can you do?
Bummer, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so just to give you an idea of what HK Chronicles actually do. So this is a website. And they say on their own website that they are publishing information about corrupt cops who beat up people on the street, right? Just to give you an idea. But now here comes the thing, right? Okay, so you can't do vacation anymore. It's not the only country. There are other countries as well. I think Turkey is one of them.
Yeah, there's a longer list of shouldn't travel.
And then you can say, well, fine, right? Like, okay, so you can't go to those countries anymore. But then, you know, and we point at China and we say, this is fucked up, you have this law, you know, and anyone, no matter where they live, is liable, and it sounds like super totalitarian, right? But now, maybe you want to tell one or two sentences about your own situation in Germany, actually.
Yeah, actually, so there's obviously the perspective of Europe doing the same. Germany has laws which made you liable regardless where the company is located, there's a reason I left years ago Germany and moved out. Yeah. So an undisclosed location. So yeah, that's actually one of the side effects. And Europe is moving to having or preparing new laws which will do the same, as regardless where you're located, you should obey. And if not, we're going to find you and arrest you.
So our point here is, and also the reason why we showed this letter from Hong Kong, is that this shit is happening in front of our door. And, you know, this guy is leaving the country where he was born. He can't live here anymore. And I know that he will probably also move somewhere else once it's no longer possible in Europe. But it's something that is really fucked up, because not everyone can pay that price if they want to actually fight for these legal grounds for other people. So let's not point at China, but like, let's fix the shit that is on our doorstep.
Yeah, so the consequences are, freedom of movement is a tiny bit limited. There are some countries which I shouldn't visit anymore, at least if it shouldn't be a one-way trip. Police raids have been in the past, that's the thing. And obviously people try to subpoena us and say like, okay, now we want to have customer data or data that you don't even might not even have, create them, whatever is possible, and obviously be silent on it, which we are not.
Yeah, so there's also this thing that if you are the boss of a big tech company, right, and you have trillions under your ass, no cop is writing a subpoena that tells you if you don't come to the court in Turing, we're going to send out an arrest warrant for the whole European Union. If you're a small hoster, people actually do that. They, like cops, they write like a complaint, and then suddenly they literally tell you, because there's someone selling ketamine on your network, suddenly, even without them actually contacting you, because the police sometimes doesn't do that because they don't know the law themselves, but they get a subpoena, and then you suddenly need to come to another country because of this bullshit. Yeah. And imagine something doing that to Bezos, right? It's not happening. So it's like, it's unfair game, and it's really fucked up.
Yeah, then we wanted to give you a small heads up which are the upcoming changes and what will be the issues. So the first part of the money laundering laws, which changed, which you might have been seeing a bit, Patrick Weyer talked about it, that the best way to pay things on the internet is shitcoins. So the European Union banned paying with such things anonymously. You have to do full KYC on everyone if you pay online things. There's the NIST 2 cybersecurity strategy, which had a small backdoor law, which makes it mandatory for domain providers to do full KYC on all European-based domain names, so no anonymous domains anymore in Europe. And then the upcoming Going Dark initiative, which actually I mentioned before, which says like, if you are somewhere, it doesn't matter, European law will gonna apply to you. If you do not collect customer data on purpose, you have to create them. If you are a messenger, you have to build a backdoor. And if you do not follow any of these regulations, we'll just arrest you.
Exactly. So so this is actually a summary of what Collier just said. So anonymous payments over 3,000 euros will be illegal, even in cash, right? Prohibition of anonymous shitcoins. We don't like Bitcoin, but sometimes it's the only way that people can pay with. It's a nuanced story, and it's not like black and white, obviously. And actually, there's a nice article also on the website of Patrick Beyer, who's from the Pirate Party, and he has a very nice nuanced reflection on this on his website. Maybe you should check it out, and we share his position, I guess, also a little bit. And yeah, as you said, risk protection is under threat. You need clear identification of customers with the NIS2 and Going Dark initiatives of the European Union, right? And there is this liability of hosters. So when you're a hoster, someone hosts content, you're liable, you know, and the criteria are pretty arbitrary. So what's next, Korea? Vietnam or Cuba?
No. Obviously, this is not a good example because obviously these states are itself territorial. But the direction is clear as Europe is moving in a direction which is not great. And nobody wants to end up in some South American country just because Europe, which calls himself being for democracy, for freedom, and civil rights just doesn't like it anymore.
Yeah, so, and there's a second thing to this, right? Like, we can decide, sure, you know, you start this to move everything to, I don't know, Vietnam or Cuba. But let's not forget that most of the people that actually rely on these laws who are not able to locate themselves to another country and continue their work, like IT or tech workers or can do, the journalists who are in Europe who are also affected by these laws, the people who work in NGOs, activists, they cannot go to Vietnam or Cuba because when they do, their work doesn't work. It doesn't work for them. And it's so important that we don't forget that there's a difference between, you know, someone who provides these platforms and the people who are actually doing the work on the ground. So this might work for us, but does it work for everyone? Obviously not. So this is actually then where we come to the call for action, right? And I think one of the things that we saw in the last 12 years is that, yeah, resistance has a price. Resisting these changes, maybe the price will increase, and we have to ask ourselves as a community, like, what are we actually ready to give to stop this shit, right? And we really want to say and stress again that we should consider this only by being together, right? By, yeah, staying connected and staying to fight for it together and supporting each other and moving forward as a community.
And do it yourself. So if you're bored and you don't know what to do on a Saturday afternoon, maybe do it yourself. Just joking, but yes, do it yourself. Maybe do a small project. Connect. Ask people who always had the idea to build infrastructure and give it a try.
Yeah, build it bun.
Yeah.
That's it.
Build it.
Thanks.
Bun.
We will have a few minutes for questions, but please, those of you on the floor, could you hold on to your drinks and feet, because I'll have to move. Hands up, who wants to ask a question?
First, I would like to thank you very much for talk. How NIS 2 would affect you, what is it going to change, like, very briefly?
Actually, NIS2 has the side effect of that. Let's say you want to have a .eu domain, which was until recently possible to register it anonymously, so you can use it yourself without... So the NIS2 changes the part of that. You have to do full KYC for everyone who does a... for example, .eu domain, so you can't have it anonymously anymore, so the only way to have a project which, let's say, leaks data or whatever, has to be a .com, .net, whatever, at the moment. So, again, the part where you can do something shrinks and gives you less options.
And other effects as well, right? That's not the only one.
Obviously, yeah. Well, in terms of infrastructure, it's mainly for that, so mainly domain parts.
Do you operate your own data centers, and have any of them been raided before?
We don't own the buildings, but we own everything around it. That's on purpose, so we can move, so we can pack and move. Obviously, we have been contacted by law enforcement before. It's not like that didn't happen. And obviously, they have been taken, or I mean, they do take or copy data. And that has been happening in the past, and obviously there's nothing you can fully avoid.
One question from the internet.
Yeah, I asked a question from the internet. Do KYC laws actually require to store information of customers? The interpretation in the internet is that they only require reasonable verifications of partner?
yes. So in theory, at the moment, it's more for a certain part, for business-to-business parts. But for example, on domain parts, yes, there is usually a certain part of a verification required. So a sign-up in a way of like just having a domain just an email address for a domain is in this case for NIST2 related domains now no longer possible.
Okay. Hi, thanks for the talk. Could you estimate if there is a difference between when you are working with a commercial client instead of a client who doesn't really pay you, or do you have this kind of difference in the legal questions?
You mean like if there's a so if there's a there is obviously in a way a difference because a commercial client, let's say, will anyway identify himself in a way, so that, let's say, falls apart from that point. But the part when you work with the end customer, he in theory can pay anonymously by just, you know, sending some €5 in a letter. So that gives a different point, yeah.
How do you monitor if your customer is doing good things or bad things with your infrastructure?
Well, as Mark said before, we don't monitor things. So we do have a way of preventing such visa verification sign-ups. I won't go into details, but that works until a certain way. But there's in general obviously no monitoring, but it works as it worked always on the internet. If somebody does something bad, somebody will gonna complain to you and say like, well, there's somebody doing something nasty, and then you have to verify it.
Hi, amazing talk, thank you so much. Question about legal advice, I guess, like for yourselves. Do you have like on staff kind of lawyers? Do you kind of take it by a case-by-case basis? How do you get like a strongly worded letter to like send back to someone, I guess?
Well, obviously, we do work with lawyers. That's always a thing. We might not always do what the lawyers tell us, because as mentioned before in talks, there might be a bit more cautious on that point. But yeah, we do take advices on that and see how far we can go with the risks and where there's a limit where we have to say, okay, this is over our possibilities.
There's something that I want to add, that there are also lawyers in the community who in the past, especially, you know, it's not a multi-billion corporation, and you cannot have like 20 lawyers. That there actually have been people in the community that help with advice as well. Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it with a lot of other people who get into legal issues as well in the community, right? Like when someone stands up to do something, everyone does what they can to support, and this is also something that we've experienced.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a technical question of how you're running this and if you're the only one who is running the daily business of the data center and the technical parts, and if you can recommend any open source project to facilitate such an operation.
Obviously, I'm not doing it alone. We obviously have more people working on it. I'm usually just the person who communicates with people, so like taking the heat in a way. But software-wise, that's something where we can obviously give some advices, and if you want, we can have a long discussion afterwards. I'm more than happy.
I wanted to ask, with the new Know Your Customer laws, you are obliged to collect this data about customers, but are you also obliged to check it in any way? Do you need like photos of IDs of people, or can people just type in any name and then...
Well, that is a bit of a tricky part. So there's a reasonable request to do verification. Also, there's a difference between what is already in place and what is, for example, upcoming ideas. So like the going dark part is something that is proposed. That's not law yet or even in an open debate, but this is the recommendations by the working group, and that do requires full verification. Like I assume they didn't mention it exactly, but that would probably lead towards something like pictures, copies of IDs. I mean, other companies do that already if they do have a suspicious question. Like Hetzner does that, for example, already. Like they might ask for a copy of your passport.
I know there are a few more questions, but please bear in mind that all of us would like to finish our shift. We will have Mark and Collier take more questions in the back, but thank you for now. Thank you, Mark, Collier, for this very good presentation.